Okay, we ready to go there, Reg? You're all set?
I like where the levels are bopping, so just leave it right there. All right. And you've got Emily on the line. Yeah, okay. So we're all set. I will give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music. I'll give you a podcast. That's our process. It's been working well for, what is it now, 271, this will be, episodes. So let's just keep it at that. Write that in the book, 271. All right. Here we go. Star, smile, strong. All right. Here we go. Ready? You set? Okay. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, listening to this podcast is not your only obligation. It's your obligation to get out there and spread the word. So tell your friends, tell your family, send them a link, send them a message that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion and that little extra effort is much appreciated. You may even get a little gold star. Who knows? Also, don't forget, if you like what you hear, don't be afraid to go to the WGNRadio.com website. Hit the prompt for this podcast, and you will find all previous podcasts in that vault. Now, in theory, they all should be there. I'm not sure if they go back to May of 2016. I hope they do. It's a very messy vault. Lots of tapes just thrown around. Although I doubt if they even use tapes anymore. A lot of digital files stacked up somewhere on a server is probably more accurate. But all 270 episodes should be there for your listening pleasure. Which can only mean one thing. Welcome to episode 271. And as we proceed with this podcast, it will be posting. I'm recording it a couple days earlier, but it will be posting at the beginning of August. And lo and behold, when I looked at my little almanac of important dates, I found out that August 1st, 1981, is an important day in pop culture history. So much so that I thought it would be worth it to actually talk about this date. I don't know if a lot of people realize it or know this date. I didn't know it. I knew it was around this time, but didn't know it was August 1st, 1981. Probably a little earlier than I thought, but sure enough, celebrating its 40th anniversary. Which makes depending on how old you are, I don't care how old you are, to think that MTV is 40 years old this week. 40 years old. MTV, can it possibly be that old? 40 years old? It's hard to believe, but it is. August 1st, 1981, a very weak, fragile signal was sent to a very small cable system in New Jersey. Hardly anybody even knew that it was out there. Certainly the majority of people in the country had no idea. And as I said, it was only in one small cable system in New Jersey where they were testing it out. And it started with, "This is rock and roll." And the first video ever shown on MTV was by the Buggles. Fittingly, the song was called Video Killed the Radio Star. And you may have heard that song. Video killed the radio star. It turned out to be very prophetic because ultimately MTV and video did kill the radio star. Now, MTV has changed quite a bit in the last 40 years, and so that's what I wanted to talk about. Not so much the MTV we know of today, but of that MTV that started now, incredibly, 40 years ago. And so to help me in our discussion, I thought there is no one better than to talk to one of our pop culture gurus who was there when the revolution started. And I'd love to get her viewpoints on this because I certainly have my views. I'm a little older than Emily, so we have different viewpoints and perspectives of what MTV meant. So I thought that would make it fun to reminisce about the early days of what MTV was and to talk about what MTV is today, if anything. But so let me welcome once again to the podcast one of our original and much beloved contributors, Emily Armonetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
So can you believe MTV is 40 years old?
No, and please don't tell me that. You know how I feel about being reminded how long I've been around.
I was in shock. I mean, I knew MTV started in the early 80s. I thought it was at least 82. You know, okay. not that that's any better, but I mean, 1981 does sound like a long time ago.
It does, yeah. But you weren't far. I mean, not too far off.
Yeah, no, but
82.
Well, the thing is, though, that depending on how old you are, if you're listening to this, there are some people that I'm sure that if you were born certainly before 1985 or after 1985, I think 1985 might be a good point because I think 1985 was kind of the year. 85 and 86 was really when MTV was at its pinnacle in terms of its. Its real hold on the culture. It remained a cultural touchstone and mover and shaker for a good portion, well into the 90s. And we could talk about.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And we could talk about the, you know, and especially many people don't even realize the importance of MTV in not only music video, which the M stands for, music TV, but then later on, really, MTV was one of the first major broadcasters to start a reality show with The Real World.
Yeah.
So
which just had a reunion. They just had
with the original people,
New
right?
New York. Yeah, with all yes. So that's and that was interesting.
Yeah.
And it was also I have to say I watched that and I can't even describe the nostalgia. You know, the feeling of nostalgia, but also like some I guess sadness is part of nostalgia. It was a little sad, seeing this group of people come back together and realizing how long ago that was and thinking back to where I was at in my life then. Because I was not too much younger than the youngest person that they had. I was about around the same similar age as the youngest.
Do you remember when you were watching that? Do you remember what year they said The Real World started? Was it 90? Do you remember what it was?
I think it was 91.
Was it 91? Yeah. I know it was early 90s.
I don't know if it was 91 or 92 now that I'm thinking about it. I know this. It was my last year at home before I went to college. And so I can't remember. It might have been the summer before I went away to college, which would have been 92. So I don't know. We'd have to look at this is something we're going to have to jump on the.
Well, I'm actually doing that right now.
Are you on it? How are you doing that?
Well, I do have a computer.
Yeah, you have like a
Although I just talked about this.
You have that thing from War Games in your closet.
Now wait a minute. This can't be right. When did it start here?
I'm going to say it was summer of 92. But then again, why did they have they just had an anniversary. So it must
be 92. 92.
Oh, it was 92. Okay.
92.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, you know, in the last podcast I did, I just explained that I might have to get rid of my flip phone.
I heard. I listen.
Yeah, I might have to.
Although, I listen to the podcast.
Yeah, although I did yesterday call T-Mobile to find out the ramifications of this this 4G, 5G network kind of thing. And while it does seem like I really should finally upgrade to a smartphone...
You think?
When I spoke to the woman to get all the parameters, because they are giving away, you know, some I can get like a free phone, you know, I don't know what kind of, you know, some Samsung A32. I don't even know what that means. Mm-hmm. And a couple other ones I might be able to get. But I did mention I have a flip phone. And she said, you know, if you really, really, you know, want to keep your flip phone, there are some flip phones that will be compatible.
Oh, okay. So, I thought this was though your whole dilemma. So you didn't know this when you
I didn't know this
it.
Before.
I thought this was the whole
it didn't
dilemma.
Really dawn on me that I just figured, okay, the flip phone is completely, you know, yeah. You know, just an outdated.
I mean, not that anyone makes them anymore, but
no, you know, well, so they do.
Oh, well,
the jitterbug. You know those commercials for the with the old people that are touching the, you know, the big jitterbug thing.
Okay, so I think what you're understanding what's happening here, right?
Yeah, I know.
You're one of those
I know.
Old
that's
people.
My peer group. That's my peer group. It just for that idea. Like I said, when I got my latest flip phone when my other one broke, and I called the Sprint store, and I said, "Do you have any flip phones?" And the woman's like, "I don't know." And then she came back. She says, "Yeah, I have one left." You know. And I said, well, can you put that on hold for me? And she's like, yeah, well, I don't think there's going to be a lot of people running yeah. for this phone.
And when, you're lucky that girl even knows what a flip phone
oh,
is.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah, they had to bring it. Yeah, it was like, oh, it was all dusty. The box was all dusty, you know.
I'm surprised she wasn't like, a what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, when I walked in and I said, you know, I called earlier, I think they thought some, like, you know, 95-year-old guy was going to walk in.
Right.
Because they're like, oh, you wanted this? What do you want this for?
Right.
You know?
Right.
But
sure.
they were still pointing at me.
A little too young yeah. for this flip.
They were still pointing at me, but for now, then yeah. for wrong reasons. But but yeah, so then it dawned on me that maybe they have flip phones that would be. So I did ask her, and she said, well, there are some. She goes, there's not many, but if you really are intent on it, I can see if we can get you a flip phone that is compatible. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's time to move on.
It maybe.
Yeah.
Also, it could be that you will be fighting my dad for that one. that one
and,
flip phone.
Yeah, and that doesn't make me feel good that I'm in your dad's peer group.
I know. Just let my dad have it. Okay.
Yeah. No, I shouldn't. I need to be in your peer group, not your dad's peer group.
This is the thing. You used to be in my peer group until you refused to give up your flip phone, and so you know this is where we're at.
I don't know. Yeah, but anyway. So, but yeah, so there's no question, you know, like I said, I was shocked to see that MTV turned 40 this week. That's so crazy. And you have to remember, now you grew up in the suburbs of Chicago where cable television was much more available before, mm-hmm. you know, Chicago with its typical, you know, corruption and red tape and clout. You know, was very slow. I grew up in Chicago proper, and Chicago was very slow to finally okay, you know, because they had to, of course, get, you know, all the aldermen had to get their cut. So mm-hmm. there was like, you know, a big bake off as to what cable companies would be allowed to service what parts of the city. So it became this big kind of, money grab and stuff. So I remember I did not get cable. Chicago, at least in my neighborhood, we did not get cable until 84.
Come on.
Right. Yeah. Now, so that is...
Oh, we definitely had it before.
No.
And also, like, my parents, my dad... Well, both of my parents, obviously, they grew up in the generation where, I mean, like a lot of stuff went down on like TV that they couldn't even believe. So nobody ever wanted to turn their TV off again. You know, like right. they watched Lee Harvey Oswald right. get right. shot. Yeah. Right. And so I know that my dad, while he is not an early adopter of any technology today,
right.
we were definitely early adopters of cable.
Yeah.
Like he would have gotten cable as soon as it was available in our area.
Yeah,
so.
No, I mean, because I remember when I, you know, because when I went to college in 82 was when my freshman year, and I was on the radio station there. That's why I went to that college, because they had a radio station, and I wanted to see if I could do this and wanted to get practical, you know, experience. And so it was in the suburbs, and everybody there in that area all had cable television. And they were already watching MTV. So I remember, you know, kind of feeling out of it. And then I made friends in, you know, at school and was able to watch cable TV with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, when I went home, because I was living at home, I was commuting. I didn't live on campus or anything. And so, I mean, I was in the dark ages. So, I mean, I remember all of a sudden, you know, everybody talking about, you know, Michael Jackson Thriller. And then in 83, there was, you know, David Bowie had Let's Dance, you know, and that whole video. And I was still, you know, getting this kind of secondhand. And then if you remember, the video explosion really, and I have to look at this too as to when it happened. But then if you remember, when MTV really took hold, then the networks that were still very prominent, cable was still in its infancy. You know, remember Friday Night Videos?
Oh, yes, I do. We used to watch that.
Yeah, that was like on, and that was like on Channel 5 on NBC, because then they were.
Oh, my gosh, that's so funny.
Yeah, like on Friday nights at 10:30 after the news, then they would have an hour and a half, and they would try to at least combat, or not combat, because there were, you know, there were commercials, but they at least wanted to get on the bandwagon to you know, get some of that, you know, kind of juice from music videos. So, you know, like I said, when I finally got MTV was not until a little farther down the line, whereas by that time it was already taking hold. But I really believe, and I don't even think that this is an over exaggeration. And I mean, like I said, now I was, you know, in my late teens, early 20s, but certainly in 81, I was, when it happened, I mean, I was what, only 17. But when you look at by 1985, I would say 1985 is really when MTV became an entity. When they, I mean, do you remember watching Live Aid? You know, the concert?
I don't know. Yeah, no, I know Live Aid. I don't remember watching it. I don't know. Well, I mean, because, I probably watched some of it.
Yeah, but because that way, because they, you know, MTV, you know, it was really a perfect aligning of the stars. You know, music, you know, was beginning to change. You know, the disco thing was over. And rock was kind of reestablishing itself, but it was also a post-punk era after the punk movement in 79 and 80. So music in 1980, at the beginning of the 80s, was a very mixed bag. You know, you had, as I said, you had the last days of disco, you had rock coming back, you had heavy metal kind of coming into the fray as well as a more of a mainstream thing. You had the British imports and the British new wave. You had, like I said, this post-punk. And then, people forget too, you had John Travolta and Urban Cowboy.
Oh, yeah.
And so then the country thing.
Oh, my God, I love that movie.
Yeah, and then so then the country music became, you know, very popular in mainstream. And that's really, I mean, now country is very dominant. But it was really, it wasn't until 1980 when country music became more of a mainstream thing because of John Travolta. In fact, I used to always joke. I would say, I'm afraid of what John Travolta's next movie is, because whatever movie he makes becomes the new music. You know, right. 1978, he made Saturday Night Fever and disco took over. In 1980, he did Urban Cowboy and country music. I mean, people can't understand it, once again, especially if you're younger. But Willie Nelson, for instance, really wasn't a mainstream star until Urban Cowboy and that whole country music thing about, you know, the you know, going to the country bar, and, you know, and what, that movie, wasn't it Gilly's? Wasn't that the bar?
Was that? It Remember sounds Mickey, familiar. I mean, Gilly. My parents, we watched that movie so many times when I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, with the mechanical really bull and all that stuff.
Yes, but he broke his arm. Remember, yeah. John Travolta breaks his arm and then he cuts his own cast off? I thought that was so cool.
But my point is, so the 80s were, the early 80s was kind of an, it's most the beginning, the beginning of a decade is always a little mishmash, because trends always are moving out and moving in, and it seems like we always go in these kind of 10-year intervals. But the 80s especially, the very beginning of the 80s, was very much a even pop culture was trying to find the next thing and find its way and what was going to happen. And then the influx of technology came in, especially in the 80s, because we, you know, by 83 or 84 you had Apple with the personal computer. But the whole idea of cable television really expanded. I mean, people now, I won't give out your age, but my only question is, do you remember a time before cable television?
Yes, I do. Very vague memories because.
But you do. You know, but you do remember. Just yes. the three networks and then the fuzzy
and
stations.
And Channel 32. Well, yeah. And then there was Channel 32.
Yeah. And there was 26, 32, yeah. And 44.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And they were all yeah. fuzzy because they were on UHF. And if you didn't have a good antenna, yes. you couldn't get those in. And so yes. you had, you know, 257 uh-huh. and then Channel yeah. 9 and Channel 11.
Yes.
And then you went to 26, 32, and 44. And that was pretty much.
And put it this way. I was so little that we were like watching the Bozo show. Right. WGN was yeah. like, yeah, that's how little.
But people in today's world, especially with all of the access that we have to so many, you know, different formats of information and entertainment. I'm sure it feels like the Dark Ages, or it sounds like the Dark Ages. At the time, we didn't feel like it was the Dark Ages because that was all that was available. And so that's what we understood and that's what we accepted. And and technology didn't allow us anything else.
Yeah.
And really, you know, the idea of cable television, what's interesting as to how cable television became popular, if you have to remember that the reason for cable television wasn't so much that it was this new entity that would allow you to see all these new and have a variety of entertainment options. Cable television as a technology was really developed because for rural areas, because the over-the-air signal would not go that far. And so mm-hmm. people in rural areas far away from the antenna and the transmission couldn't get transmission for over-the-air television. So the idea was we will send the same signal on a cable.
Mm-hmm.
And then this way we can send it as far as we want. We just have to get a hell of a lot of cable. So the idea really wasn't like, oh, we're going to expand your television options. It was mainly to deliver even the existing stations, as few as they were, to rural areas. But then once they realized that they had, and that word was new, bandwidth, they were like, well, wait a minute. We can send a lot more information on this cable. And then yeah. that's where it started. And so... But I, like I said, when I remember hearing about MTV just through, you know, the entertainment and movie magazines that I would get, you know, and music magazines like Rolling Stone. But I didn't really have access to it until 84. And by that time, you know, Thriller had come out.
Yeah.
And that was really now you were younger. But yeah. I mean, were you into like Thriller and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I think Thriller came out, I want to say I was in fourth grade, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pretty sure the Thriller came out in either late 81. And once again, I will go to my computer. I haven't used my computer this much during a show. And
yeah, I know. You're like gunning it down.
I don't know why you aren't on your bad phone, Miss Big, you know.
Yeah. I'm on it. 1983. Okay.
Cause no, it says November 82.
Cause you're on your Commodore 64 over there on your dial up.
I'm on Prodigy right now. I'm on Prodigy right now.
It was so the Thriller album was released in 1983.
It was released in 82, but by the time it really made an impact, it was 83.
Well, this says, the Thriller single was released on November 2nd, 1983.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the album came out in November.
Okay. You're right. The album came out in 82. And then we don't really know. I mean, that video, I'm sure there's a documentation of when the video.
Right.
Because that was a huge premiere. Like, that was huge.
Oh, yeah.
Because remember, it was this big, long, extended version.
Oh, it was like, right? It was like 15 minutes.
It was crazy. It was it was like watching a movie. But so like back, so I was like in fourth grade. Yes, I was a huge Michael Jackson. I had the Thriller album. I had a little purse. It was like a faux leather, maybe pleather, if that existed in 1983. I don't know.
Did it have like sequins and studs on it or
something? No. It was just, it was like a lavender purple color.
Oh, God.
And it had the Thriller. Okay, I was trying to think. I don't even know what the word is for this. It's not silkscreen, but it was like back then in the 80s. If you went to like, you got a shirt with like a band.
Yeah, like an iron-on transfer.
It was like an iron-on, yes. Okay. Right. So I had this little purse that I loved.
And they ironed it on?
Yes, I don't know how they did it. It was like I went to the kiosk at the mall.
Right.
And you would like pick your items. So you would like pick, in this case, I picked this little purse, but you could get like a, you know, the half shirt, half t-shirts.
Right.
I know for a fact that right around this same era, I had a pink half shirt t-shirt that there is a picture of me and my brother and my sister on vacation in like Arizona visiting our grandparents, all wearing our little half shirts with our favorite. So mine was like Duran Duran.
Oh my God.
I want to say my brother had Motley Crue. Oh. And my sister, I don't remember. Hers could have also been Duran Duran. But in any case, I'm sure we got them at the same kiosk. You could pick, you would pick the t-shirt.
Right.
And then you would pick the transfer.
But it's like, even there, like what you just said, you know, reinforces my point. Because at the same time, you had Motley Crue, which was the 80s hair band.
Yes.
And then you had Duran Duran, which was the 80s, you know, new wave, you know, band. And you had all these different kinds of... you know, musics, but at the same time, you know, Thriller was so important for MTV because it was the album itself was completely designed to be the phenomenon that it was. Now, nobody could have ever predicted how big Thriller got and what it was. I mean, it sold 30 or 45 million copies. I mean, it's just crazy. And it still is either number one or number two selling album of all time. But the thing is that when they made that, you know, just before, if you remember, the album before Michael Jackson made was Off the Wall. You know, I Wanna Rock With You. And that you know, that was the one that really kind of propelled him in terms of being... you know, a solo artist after so many years of being with the Jackson 5. And that side, it's kind of at least gave him a new identity as a solo artist and this kind of dance soul music that was different than the music that was being played by black, you know, artists at that time. It was a little more soulful. And this was a little more mix of pop and soul and dance. So it was kind of an interesting, you know, kind of meshing of those. But Thriller, I mean, if you remember Thriller, and you remember the songs on it. When you look back at the songs, it was definitely made to appeal to every kind of radio format and every kind of musical taste. Because don't forget, you know, you had you know, You Wanna Be Starting Something, which was a real kind of hardcore funk song.
Yeah.
But then you had The Girl Is Mine with Paul McCartney.
I know.
Was this cornball pop thing that would get on white stations because it had Paul McCartney. You know?
Well, I remember they had like that little interlude where they were talking to each other.
Oh, terrible. But I mean, this album, then you had Beat It, which was like the rock version, and that had Eddie Van Halen. Yeah. So that was appealing to the rock side. You had Paul McCartney with The Girl Is Mine to the pop side. You had Wanna Be Starting Something, and then obviously Billie Jean, which was focused at the black and urban market with the more beat-heavy kind of stuff. And then PYT was also another little kind of poppy thing that kind of went over all of those because it had, you know, it was a pop sound. It had a little, you know, that great hook. And then it had, you know, the Michael Jackson kind of beat to it. So.
Well, and then remember Human Nature, which was like more of like ballad.
Oh, right. Then really it had soft, the ballad. Yeah, like, exactly. I forgot about that. Yeah. So there was, so every song was.
Think about how many, just for one second, think about how many hit songs were on that you just named.
Right.
Those were all on one album. Like it was like, every single song, maybe with the exception of one or two, every song on that album was like a hit single.
Yeah, the only ones that were not really big hits was like The Lady in My Life, because I'm looking at the thing now, and Baby Be Mine.
Mm-hmm.
But there was Wanna Be Starting Something, The Girl Is Mine, Thriller, Beat It, Billie Jean, Human Nature, and PYT. I mean, there was only 10 songs on the album, or 9 songs on the album, and 7 were major hits.
I know, it's crazy.
I mean, and huge hits. And I mean, but my point is, it was created and contrived to appeal to different radio formats, because in that day, that was also something that was very important. Radio play sold records. This was, once again, before videos, which then later supplanted the power of radio. But still, in 1982 and 83, you had to get radio airplay. And there was a lot of different formats. So, as I said, this wasn't any accident that there were these many different songs that would appeal to many different radio formats. So there was no question that this album, when it came out, it wasn't like, oh, well, that's a Michael Jackson album, so it's just going to be played on black stations. It's like, no.
Well, no, I mean,
no, but yeah. but that's the way the thought was at that time. If you were a black artist, the thought was that you would get played on black stations unless you had a song that was some kind of crossover that would appeal to the more white-oriented top 40 stations. But this one came ready-made. It's like, okay, you want one for the black stations? We have this. You want one for the pop stations? We have this. You want one for the rock stations? We have this. So it was already kind of manipulated that way. And then with the added thing now of MTV and the visualness and Michael Jackson's ability to dance and that whole persona, and like you're saying, the Thriller, don't forget, that Thriller video, which was like 15 minutes long, you know, that was directed by John Landis. I mean, he directed Ghostbusters. Oh, no, not Ghostbusters. Oh, right. But he directed like Animal House and major movies. He was a major movie director who directed that. And then those dance sequences, you know, obviously. And then the makeup when he, you know, transformed into the wolf. So there was so much going on that the visual took over, but the music was still able to stand on its own. I mean, Quincy Jones produced that, so it wasn't like it was some, you know, throwaway. This was a very well-made album that sounded good, but then when you added the visual, and what made MTV so impactful was it was on for 24 hours.
Yes.
And very few commercials. So, I mean, you could wake up at 2 a.m. and there was music on.
Yeah.
And you cannot discount the visual. Now, I have to ask you, once again, since you were growing up right in that time, and I would assume by the mid-80s you were in your early teens, pre-teens kind of thing, so you had to have been a major, like MTV, Madonna, Duran Duran. So you were right in the sweet spot of that.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I was not quite a teenager yet, but I have to say, like, I don't know. I often say this because my brother and sister and I have been into music since we were very little. And the first concert I ever went to, I was 9 years old. You know, like my mom had to take me.
Yeah, my mom took me to mine too. I was 12. Yeah.
And it was Duran Duran. It was to give you an idea. Duran Duran. Like, what year we're talking here? It was Seven in the Ragged Tiger.
Oh, Seven in the Ragged Tiger.
Right? Remember what a big album that was, right?
Oh, my God.
And so I got into music pretty young, and part of that also could have been the influence of MTV. I mean, it did launch not that long before, you know, like a couple of years before I went to my first concert. But we had older cousins who were teenagers, and I think that also influenced, like, we probably just got exposed to more music just because of that. You know, we spent a lot of time with that side of the family. And so we were like pretty into music from an early age. And I would say, like, the Madonna, you know, like that whole phenomenon, you know, even like obviously Thriller, I said I was in fourth grade, so I was 9 years old, you know, 10 years old, I think was kind of when Madonna really started to like hit, like really come on the scene. You'd have to jump on your Commodore 64 to really nail down the dates, but like,
yeah, but with, you know, between Lucky Star, like the Lucky Star,
some of my first, you know, these albums are still floating around again, probably at my parents' house or some of my siblings' house. But like, I remember, it's probably a collector's item, but I mean, the Like a Virgin album. I had that. Like, I went and got that. Like, I don't know what, I mean, times were different. I don't know what my parents were thinking, letting me buy an album. Like, a virgin. But like, come on. Like, I was 10 years old, and honestly, every 10-year-old girl probably had that out.
So did you, wear like the bad the Madonna hair and the like the bra straps and the
I was a little young for the bra strap phenomenon, but the hair,
right?
The messy hair with the lace bow.
So like the suddenly seeking Susan look.
Yes, the rubber neon bracelets, the lace gloves.
Or desperately seeking Susan.
Desperately seeking Susan, yeah. The lace gloves.
Oh,
yeah.
You wore the gloves?
I mean, not like on a daily basis, but remember I went to Catholic school where we had to wear uniforms. So if we ever got to wear, like if we ever got to dress in our own way, I'm sure for like, you know, go to a slumber party, we all had our jelly bracelets and all our, you know, our lace bows and our hair and stuff, you know, and the hair tees just in that messy, like the way that only really Madonna could pull off. But like, we were all trying. Okay. Right. We were trying.
Oh, is that fun?
But yeah.
But the thing. It was like, you know, because people, like I said, this may sound like, you know, you're talking about dinosaur age, but you can't underestimate and overestimate how big. I would say that MTV really has been the most in its heyday, not now, obviously, but in that period from like 81 when it started, and it didn't catch on right away. But certainly by 83, and then to the early 90s, was probably, I would say, the biggest pop culture game changer influencer in history. I mean, when you think about what it has done and how it has forever changed our culture, whenever you go on YouTube now, there would have been no YouTube. You would not have seen these songs with either, you know, songs on there. The idea of viewing music was foreign before MTV, and the idea of even seeing your favorite performers, if you didn't see them on a TV before MTV, if you didn't see them on a television show, for the most part, you just saw their picture in a magazine. You didn't really see them performing. And based on your age, like you're saying, if you didn't go to concerts, if you were young, you really never even really saw them singing the songs. You always just heard them on the radio. In fact, in the 70s, there was something called the faceless bands, because there were some bands, the biggest bands in the 70s were bands like, say, Chicago or Kansas or some like these bands that they sold millions of copies, but they could walk down the street because no one ever knew what they looked like.
Right.
Because you never saw them. And that was a whole group of the faceless bands, because they sold millions of copies. And yet, aside from maybe the lead singer, because you saw them in a magazine, you didn't know who the guitarist was or who the drummer was. But when MTV came along, you know, we are visual animals. You know, we certainly react to music, audio, but we react most to the visual.
Yeah.
And when the visual was applied to music, it changed everything. And it turned, you know, you're talking about some of them people. Don't forget, I mean, in that period, you had, like, you're talking about Duran. Then don't forget, there was Boy George. Mm-hmm. You know, with his
that was Culture Club.
Yeah, Culture Club. I'm just saying, with his the androgyny look and whatever he was going for. Then you had Annie Lennox, you know, with Eurythmics, and she was kind of like this androgynous kind of thing. And then you had the Go-Go's, and then you had Cyndi Lauper, that was kind of like took the Madonna look and then made it trashy and kind of like, you know, thrift store.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take Madonna, for example, too, because this is a good example of what you're talking about. Like, yeah, Madonna, she was kind of around and, you know, she had some singles. But remember that it was actually her performance at the MTV Video Awards in like the 84, 85.
Right.
When she came out, she was in the wedding gown. She rolled around on the floor singing like a virgin.
Right.
And she has told this story over the years that When she came off the stage, her manager basically said to her, "You just ruined your career." When in fact, that totally catapulted Madonna.
Yes.
into the stratosphere.
Right.
And, you know, and that performance, obviously without MTV, you would not have had a performance like that. But for someone like Madonna, the visual aspect of her whole
persona,
her whole persona,
right,
was such a huge element. It was such a big part of her appeal, because also, like, you know, I love Madonna. I'm a huge Madonna fan. But we know, and I think even Madonna knows, she's not the best singer.
Oh,
right?
Not at all.
But she is an amazing performer, you know, and she, like, knows, she's like the whole package. And she was kind of one of the first, like, pop stars in, like, our, you know, when we were growing up, who kind of really got that in my
Opinion. She did too, though, where she was a trailblazer, was also she reinvented herself with every new album. She reinvented her persona and her image. So there was that desperately seeking
But none of that would have been possible if there were no MTV.
No,
and because you can't how do you get that out there?
No, like, she knew how to use the visual, and that's what I'm saying, that it's hard now because we are such a visual society. It's hard for people that are younger to even understand how limiting things were. But once again, it wasn't limited because the audience was limited in what it wanted. We were limited in the technology that was available. Technology, you know, advances didn't come like they do now every 6 months. You know, there was a new thing every maybe 2 or 3 years, where there was, you know, a new thing. Like, you know, we went from, you know, there was a big thing when it went from, you know, black and white television to color television. And then, my gosh, the introduction of the VCR was amazing. And then the idea of the CD, you know, as opposed to vinyl. But those things
You totally just skipped over the cassettes.
And the
that for me also, like, when I think about music and I think about that time, like albums, you know, I had a bunch of albums, and they were all that, you know, I had Thriller, and I had like A Virgin, and I, you know, and I had like some of the K-Tel stuff, you know, they were, you know, and they had the various artist things. But then I have like very distinct memories of, like the very first cassettes that I ever got. It was like Christmas.
Well, yeah, because everybody had a boombox and you were able to take your music with you.
Yes. And like, this was like, now I'm getting into my early teens. Okay. And I totally remember I made a list that, like, one of my aunts was like, what do you want for Christmas?
Right.
And I was like, it was 3 cassettes. This is all I put on the list. It was New Order Substance.
Oh my God.
In Excess.
Oh,
Kick,
right,
and the Bangles.
Oh,
I don't even remember which Bangles.
The one with Manic Monday on it, probably, and Walk Like an Egyptian.
I don't know. It might have. Yeah, maybe it was that one.
Yeah.
And I remember being like beside myself that when we used to exchange gifts on Christmas Eve with our family, and so my aunt, you know, my aunt and uncle, they're like, Merry Christmas, and they give me the gift, and they got me all 3 cassettes, and I was so over the moon. I could not even believe it.
Yeah, well, because
and it's so funny, like, to this day, and, you know, the interesting thing, too, is, like, I mean, I still listen regularly to, like, New Order and In Excess, and, you know, I think a lot of people do that. They still listen.
Well, you listen to what you grew up
with. I also listen to stuff. I listen to the yacht rock stuff that I was hearing in the car when I was really little that my parents were listening to. And I listen to new music too. You know, I listen to everything, but, you know, I haven't forgotten about those. And I still haven't lost my interest in those bands, but it's just so funny to me, like, my memory of the first cassettes that I ever got, it's just like burned in my brain, you know?
Well, and that was the thing, because you couldn't, and that was the thing too. It's like, the, you know, everybody today, now there's all this nostalgia about vinyl and all this stuff. Oh, it sounds better, and the, you know, the tangible stuff. And believe me, I understand that, because I used to bemoan the fact, because I'm somebody that, you know, I had albums, and I had cassettes, and I even had 8-tracks. Okay. So I had everything. And, And when the CD came along, or even when the cassette came along, I would always have to get the album version and the cassette version, because I always wanted to read the lyrics. And I always, you know, back then album art was still a big deal, so I always wanted to see what the album looked like. But then from a standpoint of convenience and portability, I wanted to have a cassette to put in my Walkman or to put in my boombox. So if I was going to the beach or going somewhere else, I could always take my music with me. So, and then the cassette was, you know, art of the album was always smaller, and the lyrics, if they did put it on the cassette little, fold out, you couldn't even read them. Even when I was, 15, I couldn't read them. They were so I wasn't using readers then. It was just, this is ridiculous. So I always had like several versions of my favorite albums on all the different formats that were available because of that. But my point is that where MTV really made its mark was by putting that visual on it, it made the music just come alive in a whole different way. You were now seeing them perform. You were seeing the bands themselves. When you saw them on the videos, it made you want to go to the concert even more.
Yeah.
You know, that was what, it wasn't just selling the album. It was kind of now selling, okay, now I see what they like. You were a young girl, so you're looking at, Andy Taylor and Simon Le Bon and all those guys, and you're like, oh my God, these are now your crushes. These are your heartthrobs. Donny Osmond was 10 years before.
Well, I always say, when I was 9 years old, like, I was convinced that I was going to marry Simon Le Bon, which I'm guessing he was at least, what do you think, 20 years older than me? I'm not really sure.
Oh, certainly. He was in his mid-20s, definitely.
But then the great irony is, and we were talking about this, like, Simon Le Bon, actually, to his credit, has been married to the same woman for decades. And so, I believe they're right around the same age. You know, it's a very age appropriate situation.
Right. Yeah.
But the great irony is, with a lot of these rock stars, they're actually married to women that are much younger than me. Like, right. I'm too old. I would be too old for them now. When I think about the fact that when I was 9, I thought for sure I was going to marry this 30-year-old guy.
How funny.
Like, it's ludicrous.
Yeah, but that was by applying the audio or the visual to the music, it totally, and like I said, today it's hard to figure that out. And then the interesting thing too is that not only did it change the way that you appreciated music, because now you were watching it, then that also led to, in many ways, kind of the cheapening of it, because then people realized, you know what, if you look good, you don't have to have a good song. If you look good, you could sell a lot of records just by how you look. So then suddenly image became, because as I said before about these faceless bands, if you look at most of the bands, aside from someone like Elton John, who was, very flamboyant, but if you look at most, or it's like David Bowie or Freddie Mercury in the 70s, but in most of the bands in the 70s, they weren't worried about their image. Like on stage, they just wore jeans and flannels, much like the way the grunge did, 20 years later. But suddenly, in the 80s with MTV, that's when the fashion started too. Like you said, you're a young girl and you were copying Madonna's fashion. And that's when of a sudden, the skinny ties for guys and then the moussed hair for the girls and the guys. And even like with Boy George, men starting to wear even makeup and that whole kind of androgyny thing. And you got to understand too is that what's interesting is the early days of MTV helped usher in your Boy Georges and your Culture Clubs and your Duran Durans and your Rhythmics and all these 80s, like Thompson Twins and things like that. Because early on in Britain, they did have some stations that would play videos on their television. Whereas Americans in America here, we didn't have a lot of video there were TV shows like on late night TV shows in the 70s. There was one called In Concert. Another one was called Don Kirshner's Rock Concert. But they would actually perform in person. They would lip sync a lot.
Yeah.
But they would perform.
Well, they also had like, what were some of those other like with what was the Danny Terrio one?
Oh yeah, like a Solid Gold, Dance Fever,
Solid Gold and Dance Fever and stuff.
Yeah. But they would be performing like variety shows. They would be lip syncing even on Bandstand. They would perform live. They would be there. Whereas in England and in Europe, they would film these songs, these quote unquote videos, and the stations would play those. So the early days of MTV, out of pure necessity for content, they were in 1981, 82, they were playing mostly British bands that here no one really knew about. Because that's who made the video. So, bands like The Police, like I said, The Buggles did this song, Video Killed the Radio Star. No one ever heard that song here.
Right.
And it wasn't even that big of a hit in England, but they had much more video content. So the early days of MTV, not because they were trying to be some edgy, breaking some new musical boundaries, out of pure necessity, it's a 24-hour... I think initially probably commercial free or very few commercials, but 24-hour music, they needed pure content.
Yeah.
So that's why the British music that was only heard here on FM stations or maybe able to be available here on what they used to call imports, you would go to the record store and go to the import section. And that's where you would get these British albums that you couldn't get, they weren't released on record labels in the United States, that you went to the import section, and that's where you found your Culture Club albums and your Eurythmic albums and your Duran Duran albums initially. But then when those started to get empty, I mean, like Duran Duran, once again, perfect example. They weren't that big of a hit even in England, but they had these videos and they played them here, and suddenly, girls like your age and older were like, whoa, those guys are my new crushes.
Yeah. And like Rio was kind of the first.
Oh, right.
One
Rio. And then Hungry Like a Wolf. Yeah. Rio was the one on the, that was the one on the sailboat, right?
Yeah. They were on the sailboat.
Yeah.
And then, like in the jungle.
Here, now look at the perfect example. Yeah. Perfect example. Here, 40 years later, I can't tell you all the words to Rio, but we are remembering the visuals from that song.
I know.
But that's the power of it. But it really, like I said, you cannot overestimate or underestimate the impact. And then, like I said, all the stars aligned, because in 82 and 83, you've got Michael Jackson, as I said before, with Thriller, that's got this radio ready, all different formats, all different audience aimed songs. And you put the visual, and they spent money on him. And then Michael is able to do the moonwalk and all this dancing, which you always knew that he could dance, but you never really got the full impact of how much he could dance from his days, with the Jackson 5. And then that was such a revelation, and it was so groundbreaking. And, think about it today. Those dance sequences with Michael Jackson in the middle and all the support dancers on the side of him, that is still used today. When you watch the Grammy Awards and they do some big dance sequence, or Britney Spears or whoever like that does a big dance thing, or even Jennifer Lopez on the Super Bowl shows, even today, that same format that Michael Jackson really did invent during Thriller is what we still use today.
Yeah.
When there's a dance sequence with music, it's Thriller. It's the same thing. It's that choreography. And then obviously Madonna did the same thing, but really it was Thriller. And as I said before, the ability to have songs that would relate to all those different audiences. I mean, all the stars aligned. It was this album that was made for many audiences, and then it was this album that was visually oriented, and now you had a 24-hour station that could play Thriller all day long.
Yeah.
That's why you got your purse.
Well, yeah.
Because of how you were indoctrinated, was my point. Not just because you thought the song was cool. You were seeing that so much that it was burning into your retinas.
Yeah, it was literally the Thriller album cover that was transferred. You know, Michael Jackson's wearing like the white suit.
Oh, how
and he's
funny.
Like casually like
laying down,
leaning back on his elbow.
Yeah. And then, like I said, what maybe you were a little too young to really appreciate it, but then where MTV then really switched from just being this kind of culture, you know, this pop culture cool thing that everybody, I mean, and then the genius was the I Want My MTV slogan.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was, I mean, to the point where, if you remember, you know, Dire Straits' song, you
course,
know, Money for Nothing, starts with I Want My MTV. You couldn't have, I mean, there was no question that that song wasn't going to get played on MTV.
Right, yeah. But, well, that song now will forever be connected
with
MTV, yeah.
But that whole I Want My MTV.
Well, actually, that whole song was written. Wasn't that whole song written based on this idea that look at these rock stars, like
look at that yo-yo. Yeah. That's the way you do it. You get your guitar, guitar on your MTV.
But I think if I'm not mistaken, I feel like I heard this story once, and I don't know if it's true or if it's just like an urban myth or something, that it was like Mark Knopfler or one of the band members.
Yeah.
Actually, the inspiration for that
some
song,
guy.
They were having something delivered to their house, and they overheard the delivery guys talking about, look at these guys, you know?
Well, because that was the whole idea. It's like, we got to install microwave ovens, and look at these guys. They're getting money for nothing, and their chicks are for free because they're doing is playing their guitar, and look, we're working hard, and they're doing nothing, and they're getting paid millions. I mean, that was the whole idea of Money for Nothing. But but my point is that, you know, that whole I Want My MTV, it was a perfect slogan. It was short. It was to the point, and it was rebellious and edgy because really, in my view, like, for instance, the only reason it was true. The only reason that I got MTV finally, that I got cable television in my house, when that guy left the house and when he plugged in my cable and I finally had it after waiting for 2 or 3 years and feeling so out of the zeitgeist, what do you think what I put on for the first 2 weeks that I didn't watch any other stations? I just had the first thing I ever watched on cable television in my house was MTV. I mean, I did want my MTV.
Well, and it was genius too because it was the artists that they had in the promo. So it was like Billy Idol and like the Police and like Madonna saying, "I want my MTV." You know, so it was
it was genius. Yeah, and you know, and then the whole MTV logo. And then they had the guy with the moon, and that whole idea of them being on the moon, they were equating MTV as being this cultural phenomenon, like equating it to landing on the moon. It was going to have that much. So that was
from the get-go.
Right.
From the get-go. Not like it wasn't like on the 20-year anniversary of MTV, they created this campaign around the moon landing and whatever. It was literally from the get-go, which is pretty genius.
And that's what was so cool about MTV at that time. It was edgy. It was rebellious. It was cocky. And it was everything. It totally fed into the rebellion and the sense of freedom, the sense of something that your parents didn't understand or like or know about, which is always what teenagers are going for. So it wisely marketed itself as this, finally, for people also find it hard to believe or understand, but even in the 70s, as big as it made money, rock and roll was still viewed as a fad. It was still viewed as this kind of little niche music that was never mainstream music. Because you have to remember, and you were too young for this, but during the 70s, while you had Led Zeppelins and Queens and Elton Johns and David Bowie's and all these people, if you watched television during that time, they weren't on TV. TV was still dominated by Dean Martin and Carol Burnett and Frank Sinatra and Don Rickles and that old guard.
Mm-hmm.
That was still and Bob Hope and Bing Crosby. That was still what we saw on those other networks. I'm telling you about 2, 5, 7, and 9. So even though rock and roll was around, it was certainly an entity, But the mainstream was still dominated by those people from the 40s and 50s. They were a little older, but they were still dominant. And what MTV did, just like the Beatles made a lot of those people irrelevant in the 60s, MTV completely shifted everything. From then on, there after MTV, that whole era was gone. Because now you had rock and roll as a visual that people were reacting to those personalities, not just the music, but the personalities. The funny thing is, for all the Thompson twins and all the, you know, Durans and all the Billy Idols, if you look at who the biggest stars of the 80s are, when you think, when I say to you, what's 80s music, what do you say?
What, if you ask me what's 80s music?
Yeah, what's the 80s music? When you think of the 80s, what do you think of?
I mean, I think of new wave.
Okay,
like what? Pop, like Madonna and Michael Jackson.
Okay, yeah. So you say Michael Jackson, Duran Duran, you know.
Yeah, right.
You know, that you know, Howard Jones, you know, Cyndi Lauper, right. But you know, what the reality is? If you think about who sold the most albums in the 80s and who made the biggest impact in terms of the images and solidified their images, it was all people from the 60s and 70s. David Bowie had his biggest album ever with Let's Dance in 1983. Yeah. Prince, his first albums came out in the late 70s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's a 70s artist. Bruce Springsteen wasn't until 1984, but his first albums came out in 1973. Genesis with Phil Collins. They were around in the 60s, but Genesis was huge on MTV.
Yeah, for sure.
So the irony is, as much as we think of those new wave bands, it was the 70s and 60s artists who used their already established personas, but now they were able to be visually viewed, and people were like, whoa, these guys are cool. So the irony is, for all the Thompson twins and all the, you know, Tears for Fears and all those bands, really, if you look at the albums of the people that sold the biggest and that had the biggest albums of their careers, they were all 60s and 70s people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they never had that opportunity to be visual before, but they did have a reputation already and a persona that they were able to put in. So like I said, when Live Aid was on, I mean, MTV, I remember where I was. I mean, they broadcast all 16 hours of Live Aid.
Right.
Live Aid.
And they can do it.
And that solidified them as now, they weren't just a place to go to see the new music, you know, whatever video, or to watch a video. They were the place to go for anything about music.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so that, you know, and then, as I said, those VJs, Mark Goodman and JJ and Nina Blackwood and all those people, and Alan Hunter.
Martha Quinn,
they all became instant celebrities. It was an amazing alignment of the culture and technology hitting at the same time, and at the same time, an idea that the audience was ready for it. You know what I mean? And and so as much as like people, you know, your age or even my age, we bought into that. But as I said, you got to remember, it was the yuppies, the 30-somethings, that really drove that.
You know what's really weird, now that you're mentioning the original VJs? What's so weird now is that MTV today doesn't really play music videos anymore.
As I know.
But get this. Some of those original VJs are on the radio.
Right.
Like,
on Sirius, yeah.
On Sirius, yeah. Like Mark Goodman's on, I know. Yeah. Nina Blackwood, oh my God, I don't know what's going on with her. Her voice.
Yeah, did you hear her voice? Oh my God.
A lot of cigarettes being smoked still, I think. I'm worried for her health, but yeah, okay, that's another story. I mean, I want to say, I think I even hear Alan Hunter sometimes
Definitely.
Doing like countdowns and things.
Remember Richard Blade?
Richard Blade.
Don't you remember he was the English guy?
But he wasn't an original.
No. I'm just saying, but he was big. He was also on, the MTV sometime, you know, but he was a British guy. But he's
yeah,
on
but he's
on
got he's, a show.
Yeah, he's yeah. on First Wave, yeah.
Right, right.
But all those guys are still around and they're all talking, you know, and they're all on the 80s channels and they're all
I wish that MTV would go back to playing videos and bring these guys back on TV rather than now they're it feels a little bit like there's been this weird regression in a sense. Now
well,
that
that's yeah. Well, that's the sad know, part. The sad radio. Part is that there's no M in MTV.
Well, right. Yeah.
I mean, MTV is still on, but it's mostly you know clip shows or reality shows.
I mean, I don't even know because I don't put it on.
No,
anymore
I don't watch it.
It is
all.
Really. There was a shift at one point where it felt like it really just was all reality TV.
Yeah. Now, so I think that when you've got, it seems like now, you know, everybody's watching YouTube, you know, and watching all these videos with all their likes. It seems to me, and, you know, and it's still, I think it's overblown, but, you know, the younger people who are used to, you know, I think the sad part is that MTV at the same time made music very disposable because it was so ubiquitous. It was everywhere. It was on your TV 24 hours. And then when digital came along and it just became files that you just bought in the ether and you didn't have to go out to a record store anymore and you couldn't hold the album. So I think that's what the appeal now to the a younger generation about vinyl is that there is this tangibility to it that at least I can, you know, there's so, you know, most of their music, they never could touch it. They never could feel it. They never could read lyrics. And so that's the appeal of the album, even though from a sound version or from a convenience, I mean, still the CD is much better or even, you know, you still can't carry this album around with you to go to the beach or, you know, in your car. But I would think at the same time, if the younger generation is looking for a more tangible, tactile, real musical experience because digital has just made it into almost nothing, it's almost perfect for MTV to come back again and play those and play videos again to get a more communal aspect. Because, I mean, there was a time when, like you said earlier in our conversation, you knew when there was an MTV world premiere video.
Oh, yeah. It was a big deal.
I mean, you stayed in.
Oh, yeah. And they had that whole intro, right? The whole intro just for that one video.
And everybody was home watching when Michael Jackson's Black and White came out. Everybody watched it. It was the new video. I mean, that was a big deal. And we have so, you know, and we are now such an isolated society, and because of the internet and because of the smartphone, you know, we have so few communal cultural events anymore. You listen to what you want to listen to. You watch what you and you watch it when you want to watch it. Before, it was on at one time and you had to watch it when everybody watched it. And we don't have that anymore. You know, your musical taste and my musical taste, I don't have to wait to listen to a radio station to hear the song I want to play. Before, you had to. You had no other place to find that record.
Right.
You had to wait for the radio station to play it, unless you went out and bought it.
Well, the other thing too, like as, you know, as MTV evolved, and I was now we're talking like college years for me. That's where we got like our pop culture news. Okay, so
right.
Like, how do you think I found out that River Phoenix had died?
Right.
Kurt Cobain.
Right.
Michael Hutchins. I mean, it got to the point where, and of course it was always like 1 a.m. and you just gotten home from the bars with your friends and your roommates and you turn on MTV, you know, and here comes Kurt Loder.
Right.
With the MTV news breaking news.
Right. Like, Kurt Loder.
It got to the point where it was like anytime that breaking news intro came in with Kurt Loder at like 1 or 2 a.m, you were like, oh great, who died?
Right.
You know,
and they
like,
usually did.
Died. Right. Because what else was MTV having breaking news at 1 a.m. for, you know, like it was a huge, but that was like a, you know, again, like talk about like, you remember exactly where you were. Like, I'm not even joking. I literally remember sitting in my apartment my sophomore year in college when they broke in to say that River Phoenix had died. And then Kurt Cobain. And then, I mean, Michael Hutchins, I remember I was out of college by then. But
right.
Again, it was like we just got home from the bars. We're sitting around in our apartment in Wrigleyville, right? And, you know, I mean, those are now that I look back, at the time you don't realize it, but you look back and you realize that those were kind of these big moments in pop culture, right? Yeah. It's not like in the grand scheme of things, but certainly in pop culture.
It was and that was the thing. And that was, to your point, that was the place where you went. And I've joked about, and we've talked about here, I always say, you know, my God, now in today's world, especially with the streaming services, you know, there's no one source. You know, there's not one place where all of the information sits. You know, in the old days, there was, you know, for television, there was the TV guide, and you had the TV guide on your cocktail table that you either got from your Sunday paper or you know, subscribed to the actual TV guide. But you, that was where all the shows that were on were listed. You know, in today's world, I mean, half these shows, you know, I don't know what I'm missing. Because I don't even know, like, for instance, this year I was so mad I missed the spelling bee.
Oh.
I love the bee.
Oh no.
And I because, you know, it's usually on the last week of May. You know, it's over like Memorial Day weekend. Well, because of COVID, it was pushed into the summer.
Oh man, these are different times.
So yeah. I had no idea it was on in July. I woke up one morning. I'm looking at my websites for my news, and it says, "Oh, you know, 12-year-old or 10-year-old girl wins the bee." And I'm like, "When was the bee?"
Oh, no.
I'm like, "I missed the bee." You know, and it's because there is so much on. It's on so many different formats, on so many. Now we've got streaming, we've got cable, we've got YouTube channels, we've got, you know, and how do you keep up? And back then, to your point, MTV was the source of not even then it grew to not just music. It was movies. It was everything that was important in pop culture.
Yeah.
You went to MTV to get the news, to get the music, and you can't overplay that too. It was always on, like you said, at 1 a.m. You can come home, put on your television, and you could either get some news, or you knew that there was something to watch because it was MTV, and there was some song was going to play that you liked.
Yeah,
you know, and like I said, that just sadly doesn't exist anymore. And I don't know if MTV wants to be that anymore, sadly. I wish they were, because I think there's a void right now. There is no kind of clearinghouse. You know, there is no one spot that you go to. And I really believe there's a need for that. But my gosh, you know, MTV, you know, it came out of nowhere. As I said, it aligned perfect, and it filled that void, and it really was important. And it really, if you were a young person in the mid-80s to the mid-90s, it was a regular part of your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, and it did influence you, but it was kind of this place where you went for information about, especially if you were into pop culture. And, I mean, my God, like I said, to think that it's 40 years old is really just kind of crazy. But, and especially when you, like you said before, when you look at it, now it is it if they do play music videos, it's for nostalgia.
Yeah. And I don't even bother. I have no idea if they even do.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I mean,
can't tell you the last time I put on MTV.
Yeah,
just
I don't
that.
Even
it
know.
Makes me a little sad.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. Because it's still around, and yet it's still not, but it's not around.
We just assume that we cannot go there to watch anything music related anymore.
Yeah, for all we know, they do play videos.
Yeah. Maybe. I'm just afraid, though, that if I try to give it a chance,
right,
I'm going to accidentally stumble upon an episode of Teen Mom.
Right, exactly.
And I don't need to see that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, and that's, yeah, they totally sold their soul to the reality world. And the irony is that they started reality shows with the real world. And it was a very well-made and very thought-out kind of concept.
Yes, but it was also pure. Okay.
Yeah, right.
In those early days, it was pure. Now, people who go on reality shows, they know what
it's scripted.
Or they know what they think people want to see.
Oh, yeah, it's scripted.
They have producers who nudge them in directions.
Yeah.
And do certain things to create conflict and stuff. And so it's not pure anymore like it was, you know, and that's why it works.
And it goes for the sensationalism, like you said, Teen Mom, and, you know, they go for the outrageous.
Jersey Shore. Jersey Shore was MTV, right?
Yeah,
I know that was a while ago now.
Yeah,
but.
And they actually have a reunion of that now, I guess.
No. Oh, great.
Yeah.
When do we tune in for that?
Yeah, exactly.
Your TV guide out, Jim. We're not going to miss that.
Can't get enough of Snooki.
You've already missed the bee, okay? You cannot miss this. It would be devastating.
But, I mean, it is sad because, like I said, it's such it's just a shadow of its former self. But that is one thing that, to have been there for that at its peak, at its pinnacle, and what it did and how it shaped so much of what we see today and how we enjoy, or at least how we experience entertainment on all levels, whether it's music, whether it's movies. It really did start with MTV, and you cannot if you're at a certain age, you probably don't fully appreciate it, but my gosh, if you were there for the sweet spot, you realize what a total game changer it was. It really, I mean, I look back at all, you could talk about, Elvis on the, on Ed Sullivan, or the Beatles on Ed Sullivan and stuff like that, changing the culture. And they certainly did. There's no question about that. But I would put MTV right up there next to those kind of touchstone moments as well.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Yeah,
for sure. Well, look at you. Just for saying, for sure. Oh, totally. My God, you must have been the worst Valley girl on earth.
Totally, for sure.
I mean, you still talk like that.
I know.
I mean, I almost didn't hire you. I almost didn't hire you at the PR firm because of the way you talk.
You can take the girl out of the 80s, I guess. But
you are Moon Unit Armanetti.
Yeah.
Well, Emily, this was so fun to reminisce, and it's so funny to hear it from your standpoint, being younger, because it was, I would assume, even though you have some early memories, it seems like you kind of grew up with MTV sort of in your real memory, kind of always being there.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Whereas from my standpoint, it was like this thing that I couldn't even get. Until it was almost a phenomenon. I was killing myself going, I'd come to work, or come to school every day and stuff, and especially working at the radio station, it was that's all we talked about was music. And people like, oh my God, did you see the new video for this? I'm like, no. I live in Chicago. I mean, I never forget. That's all I would have to say is, I live in Chicago. We don't have cable.
Oh, poor Elton Jim.
Poor Elton Jim. Then fine, and then forget about it. I mean, then I never saw the sun again. I was just in the basement watching MTV. I mean, I never forget. Like I said, that first week, I don't think I left the house.
Yeah,
because I think we pretty sure we got it sometime in the summer. So I was home from school and everything.
Yeah,
and I don't think I left the house for a week.
Yeah, just like a constant.
Yeah, it was
like
just,
an MTV.
Yeah.
Ivy.
Yeah, I mean, I swear to God. But anyway, so MTV this week, 40 years ago, August 1st, 1981, MTV first sent its little fragile signal, as I said earlier at the top of the podcast, to a small, just as a very, very kind of experimental thing, to one small cable system in New Jersey. And who would have thought that two or three years later, it literally would have started a revolution. And 40 years later, while it doesn't continue to drive our culture, it certainly had an impact and of how we live today and how we consume our entertainment was clearly influenced by what MTV was. So, Emily, all I would suggest that you do is when we say goodbye, is if you can, I would go back and find your, what was it? The red tiger, what was that? What was the name of that?
Oh, the Seven and the Ragged Tiger.
Go find your Seven and the Ragged Tiger program.
Yeah.
Go get some mousse. Tease your hair.
Yeah.
Now you can expose your bra straps.
I'm going to practice my moonwalk.
Do your moonwalk. Put those scrunchies. Like, where didn't Madonna have, like, were they bows or scrunchies in the hair?
They were like lace bows. Like, and a strip of lace.
And no, wasn't there, like, not, like, wasn't there like a
constructed lace bow? It was like a strip of lace that she tied into a bow.
And wasn't there some kind of a lace top too?
Well, yeah, there was a lace top. There were some lace fingerless gloves.
Right. Oh, that's, you know, right. What I mean? The fingerless gloves.
That would go maybe a little bit like halfway up your forearm.
And you had the midriff too, right?
Oh, well, yeah, the midriff was, yeah.
And then weren't there like the bad white socks that went up to your ankles?
There was an element of like a white sock folded over, right. And then like maybe a black shoe.
Right. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Well, oh, yeah. I think you could still rock that.
Oh, without a doubt. Oh. For sure. Like, totally. Here we are. You know what? Whatever. I will rock, though. I will say this.
Tubular.
I do have an MTV sweatshirt. And,
really?
And I, whenever I wear it, I always get a comment or a compliment.
Really?
On it. Yes.
Now, where is it newer or older, though?
It's newer. It's just was,
oh,
like,
where did you get it?
I don't remember where I got. I mean, it's like one of these, you know, like the companies that make like fake, band t-shirts,
right,
and
yeah,
things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to say it's like one of those.
Yeah.
But I saw it and I liked it. It's just like a gray, it's very comfortable too. It's just like a gray sweatshirt with the MTV logo on it.
Right.
With a little.
Look at you being like, all nostalgic and being all cutting edge and being all. And now you could walk around and say to the, when you wear that, you say, do you know that MTV is 40 years old?
Well, yeah. And so like, I don't have my lace, like, crop top with me, but I think today I will rock my MTV sweatshirt.
Yes, you have to wear that and put on your Duran Duran albums. Yes. And so what was, do you remember what Seven and the Ragged Tiger, what was on that album? Was that the Reflex? No, that wasn't the Reflex.
Yeah, it was.
Was it the Reflex? See, I know, because that's all I played on my radio show in college.
And it was like New Moon on Monday.
Oh, God. Right? New Moon on Monday. Oh, yeah. My God.
What else was on that album? They had a few
Seven
hits on that album.
The Ragged Tiger.
I mean, at the time, I listened to that album like start to finish without, you know, ever. So a lot, I mean, I'm sure there were a lot of like, I don't know what you'd call them, B-side or singles or whatever on it.
Yeah.
I think the biggest hits were, the Reflex.
The Reflex.
Oh, Union of the Snake.
That was a horrible song. You know that the Union of the Snake was terrible.
What?
Oh.
For shame, Elton John.
Oh, God. The Union of the
Snake. Okay, those are fighting words now.
I mean, the Reflex, I'll give you. But I remember. I think that was the first song. I think that was the first single, too. The Union of the Snake. Oh, that was so.
And there was like a remix version.
There was so pretentious.
Not on that album, but there was like a remix version that you could catch sometimes.
Well, remember the remixes too? Remember that? Those the dance remixes, the 12-inch remixes that you would buy too, where they would extend the songs.
Yeah.
You know, and put all the extra, you know, synthesizer stuff in those songs. Oh,
right. Yeah. Well, I believe that there was like a version of Union of the Snake that was like that.
Oh,
yeah.
God,
mm-hmm.
Too funny.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our stroll down memory lane.
I did.
Wear your MTV sweatshirt and we will talk again soon. I'm glad we were able to go back to the 80s with you and, stay safe, stay masked up, and Duran Duran forever.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Jim.
Take care. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget, send a message, send a link, tell your friends, tell your family that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion
And that little extra effort is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 271. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.